Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneurial life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Julia, I am doing great today. You didn't ask me how I'm doing. I'm doing great.
I'm excited
because it's a good topic. The topic today, we're going to be talking to Dr. Gary Chapman. I'm going to read the bio and intro, but love is a choice. And as I told Dr. Chapman before we started recording, it really can be a tough choice. For some of us, correct?
No comment.
Today's guest is no stranger to our show, and we're honored to have him back. Dr. Gary Chapman is a speaker, pastor, counselor, and known worldwide for his best-selling book, The Five Love Languages. He has a passion for people and helping them form lasting relationships, something he's been doing for more than 30 years. In his latest book, Love is a Choice, he shares stories of his success that inspire us to go deeper and learn how to improve all of our relationships by putting love into action. Welcome, Dr. Chapman.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you guys again.
We are so excited.
It's been a long journey since our first podcast because I really wasn't, I don't want to say aware of the five love languages, but
you weren't aware at all.
Well,
it's okay. We all have to learn it for the first time.
Well, like right? So I say, it loves a choice, everybody. We haven't even started yet. I'm already getting roasted. But I remember reading the book. For me, it was a profound impact because as I get older in life, things are pretty simple. We make things have to be really complicated. And the book laid it out pretty simply for me for how you love people and how you receive love. And then we've had the honor, Dr. Chapman, of interviewing countless five love language writers, speakers. It's been an amazing journey for us the last 2 years to be able to talk to them and discuss with them, because it's not even just for the family. It's for business, which we will not talk about on the show. But I mean, why did you write Love is a Choice? You've done so many things. You've been so active. What made you want to write this most recent?
Well, this book is totally different from anything I've done before, because it is a collection of people telling their own stories of loving, and loving often in difficult situations. And just they demonstrate the power of love when we reach out to whatever the situation and we genuinely love another person. In a meaningful way to them, it not only changes their life, it's a tremendous sense of satisfaction in your life, just to realize that you've made a difference in somebody's life. So actually, when I was reading over these stories again, because these stories are written by real life people, I didn't write the story, they wrote their own story. But I was reading them over them again when the book finally came out. And there were two or three of them. It just brought tears to my eyes. I just thought, man, this is powerful, you know. And my hope is that as people read these stories, they will look at their own life and their own circle of friends, you know, their family situation and then beyond their family, and just be thinking in terms of God, you know, how might I love and who might I love, in today's world. So, if we have more people loving, we're going to change the culture. And that's what I hope will happen.
There was one story in the book that really hit me hard, because it was a story of the daughter and her father who didn't really reciprocate love. And I want all of dads out there to listen. Make sure you're present with your children. You may not think it's important, but kind words, loving words, hugging your children every day, giving them a kiss, that may not have been how you were brought up and raised. But I'll tell you one thing. That's what kids want. They want our adoration. They want to know that we're paying attention. And when I read that story, it was really impactful to me of what she yearned. She just yearned. And he hugged her and he patted her on the back, and that made me feel good. And maybe that's all she needed. But I mean, what did you think about that story? To me, that's one that really stood out to me.
Yeah, there's a real sad element to that story, and that is that she went for years and years and years, and it was only as an adult, near the end of her father's life, that he finally hugged her and gave her a pat on the back. And she said, I'll never forget it. You know, he died not long after that, and she said, it's the hug I'll never forget, because I longed for it all my lifetime. And, you know, I think a lot of fathers were not loved themselves growing up. You know, they weren't hugged by their fathers or their mothers, and so they didn't learn how to do that. And this was one of those fathers, you know. And even though she, as an adult, came to where she started reaching out to him and giving him words of affirmation and giving him, you know, a physical touch, but he never reciprocated. you know, he you know, she would hug him. He just kept his arms down to his side, you know, until that one day later on in his life and her life. But it demonstrates, whatever our age, whether we're children or whether we're adults, the need to feel loved by the significant people in your life is paramount. It's just so important. And that's why she remembers that hug that he finally gave her and that pat on the back that, you know, even though he was near death, it was so meaningful to her. So if we can understand that, hopefully it'll motivate us. Hey, let's start now. I don't care whatever age you are. Let's reach out to the people in our family and let's express love in meaningful ways to them.
And I love that because it's never too late. You know, a lot of us is like, well, you know, we wasted 20 years. It's never, ever too late to do it. And it's interesting because they both chose love at a different time. The daughter hugged him. The father didn't choose yet to hug back. And I think it goes with patience on our part. Because when we're ready to love, when we're ready to choose love, maybe the other person isn't yet. And I think that's where the patience come in, right?
Yeah, I think love stimulates love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she decided to reach out to him, mm-hmm. even though he was not reaching out to her. Mm-hmm. And she had longed for his love all those years. But she decided, I'm going to love him in spite of the fact he's not loving me, or at least not in a way that was meaningful to her. And, you know, the Bible says, for example, we love God because God first loved us. We didn't initiate it. He loved us while we weren't loving him. And then we reciprocated, we responded. And when we do reach out and choose to walk the road of love to someone in our family that's not loving us, or at least we're not feeling love, it does stimulate something inside of them. It's a tremendous influence. We can't make people love us in a meaningful way, but we can love them, and we're influencing them because love does tend to stimulate love. And in her case, it took a long time, but eventually, he responded in a way that she never forgot.
In the book, you say that love is an action word. Can you describe that to the listeners out there? Because you've also, I think, said in the book it's an emotion. People equate it to an emotion or feeling, but you say, no, it's an action word.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biblical concept of love is not emotion. Now, falling in love is an emotion. You don't get up one day and say, I think I'll go fall in love with somebody today. It just happens. I mean, there's something about them, the way they look, the way they talk. Ooh, you just feel something and you want to be with them again. That's an emotion. But, you know, we've discovered that has an average lifespan of 2 years. We come down off the high. And then that deep emotional need for love is still there. All of us have an emotional need for love. But love itself starts with an attitude and then with behavior, and then that stimulates emotions. This kind of love doesn't start with the emotion. It starts with a choice. And the attitude is, I'm in this relationship to try to enrich the life of the other person. If it's a parent, I want to enrich the lives of my children. If we're married, I want to enrich the life of my spouse. And we take that attitude, then it shows up in our behavior. And as we discover their love language and start speaking their love language and behavior, it touches them emotionally. It meets that deep emotional need. And when they do the same for us, it meets that need for us. But I think it's important to realize it doesn't start with an emotion. It starts with an attitude and behavior. See, in our culture, we basically have the idea that love is an emotion. And that's why people say sometimes in a marriage, well, you're not making me happy, you know, and I'm not staying in this marriage because I'm not happy. Well, that's selfishness. That's the opposite of love. Two selfish people are never going to have a good marriage because they're looking at the whole relationship in terms of what am I getting out of this.
Thank God, time out, because I'm selfish and she's not. So that's why the relationship works, huh? Man, I was wondering, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that just popped in my head. I'm like, wow. And the other thing is that love and the emotion, it's like having a cupcake. I'm Italian. I like to eat. That emotion, that adrenaline, that dopamine hit, all of a sudden I got the sugar rush, but then after 2 hours, it's gone. And that's what you're equating love with. It's almost like a rush that we have in that emotion. But then that's not going to end. That's short-termism. We always, at Jake and Gino, talk about the long-term mindset. If you think long-term, you're going to take different actions to be in a long-term relationship. You're not going to act selfishly. You're going to try to act selflessly. And you also said in the book, it begins with you, not what you say or feel, which I thought you were probably transitioning to before I interrupted you. So sorry about interrupting you, but I just thought that was very very
tough. Yeah, I think we have to decide that I'm going to love the person. You see, when we get married and come down off that high, then we both go back to being normal. And normal is often selfish. And, you know, a lady talked about another story in there where she talked about her husband. They went on their first anniversary, and she was looking for a real romantic time, you know, and he's out there fishing in a little pond or a river, and she's sitting in the car just thinking, what is this all about, you know? And he was so into himself. He enjoyed fishing, you know, but it was he had a different idea of what it was going to be like on this little trip they were going to take. And then it kept on, you know, at the beach. She loved to walk on the sand on the beach, you know, and he didn't like sand on his toes, you know. And she liked to go with the kids later on the boardwalk, and he didn't like all those people around him. Yeah. And so, but, you know, he realized, and she realized ultimately, we have to be willing to do some things that we don't feel comfortable with in order to really communicate love to other person. Listen, Jesus did not feel comfortable about going to the cross. In fact, he even said to the Father, if there's any other way, please, please. But nevertheless, what I want is your will. So we have to choose that attitude to love the person, whether or not they're loving us. And do some things, you know, with them that they like she's finally decided I'm gonna fish with him,
yeah.
And then she went turkey hunting with him.
Yeah.
3 o'clock in the morning. Not my idea, she said, of a fun time, but he enjoyed it, mm-hmm. And so she joined into that, which is, you know, it's giving of yourself to do something with the other person that they enjoy doing.
Let me ask you, in your relationship with your wife, when did that happen to you? Did that ever happen when you came down after your sugar rush and after a couple of years of being married? When did it happen to you? Or you're like, I'm not really happy in this relationship. You're not making me happy. Did you have that revelation back then, or were you still in the me and the selfish part?
We went through a lot of struggles in our marriage. First of all, no one ever told me that the emotional high, you know, we call falling in love, is temporary. I mean, I was always told if you got the real thing, it's going to last forever. And my wife and I dated 2 years before we got married.
Wow.
So I came down off the high pretty soon after the honeymoon. And all those things my mother had told me before I married her, you know, because your parents can see the other person for real. And all those things my mother told me were true. And I'm thinking, oh, man, Mama, I wish I'd listened to you. And we ended up arguing because we didn't know how to solve conflicts. You know, when you're in love, you don't think you'll have any conflicts. And so we argued with each other. And not only did I lose the positive feelings, but then I started having negative feelings toward her because she wouldn't listen to me. You know, I mean, I knew it was right on whatever it was, you know. She knew she was right. And so and I thought, man, this is not working. You know, this is not working. And what compounded the problem for me is 2 weeks after we got married, I enrolled in seminary to study to be a pastor. And here I'm studying to be a pastor, and I'm miserable in my marriage. And I'm saying to God, I prayed that you would not let me marry her if she wasn't the right one, and you let me do it. I mean, I'm blaming God for getting me into this, you know.
I've done that on occasion, so okay.
And for us, it didn't turn around overnight. We were in the marriage for a good long while. Before I finally one day just said to God, I don't know what else to do. I've done everything I know to do. It's not working. And as soon as I said that, there came to my mind a visual image of Jesus on his knees washing the feet of his disciples. And I just heard God say, that's the problem in your marriage. You do not have the attitude of Christ toward her. Hit me like a ton of bricks, because I remember what Jesus said when he stood up. He said to his disciples after he washed their feet, he said, you call me Lord and leader, and you're right, but in my kingdom, the leader serves. And I knew that was not my attitude. Mm-hmm. You know, my attitude was, look, if you'll listen to me, woman, we can have a good marriage. You know. So I just asked God to forgive me, you know, and to give me the attitude of Christ. And in retrospect, it's the greatest prayer I ever prayed about my marriage, because God changed my heart and gave me a desire to serve her. And really, three questions made it practical for me. When I was willing to ask these three questions, our marriage began to change. They're simple questions. The first one is, honey, what can I do to help you? Second question is, how can I make your life easier? And the third question is, how can I be a better husband?
So I'm making sure my wife writes these down because she's going to ask me these questions tonight.
He's writing
I'm writing them down, but
I'm not sure if I have a better memory.
I'm just like, I got to get this down. I need to get them.
I already asked those questions.
Here's what happened to us is when I started doing that, it didn't change overnight, but within 3 months, my wife started asking me those three questions. What can I do to help you? How can I make your life easier? How can I be a better wife? And that's when the thing really turned, because I'm reaching out to serve her and she's reaching out to serve me. Now, you see, we've both got an attitude of love and the answers are telling us how to love. So, you know, so now we're reaching out. And I think this is really, it's right at the heart of what marriage is all about. It's a husband and wife who follow the example of Christ and reach out to serve each other, and they find out how to do it in a meaningful way to the other person. And when you do, it's a loving, supportive, caring relationship. You know, I told my wife some time ago, I said, you know, honey, if every woman in the world was like you, there'd never be a divorce. Why would a man leave a woman who's doing everything she can to help him? And my goal has been to so serve her, and when I'm gone, she'll never find another man to treat her the way I've treated her. She's going to miss me if I go first.
I feel the same way, my friend. We got a lot of commonalities here. You hear that, baby? So how can I? So when you were asking her these questions in the beginning, she must have said, Gary, are you drinking a little too much? What's going on with you? I know it wasn't an easy sale in the beginning. How did you, I don't want to say convince her, but did you really sit down with her and say, honey, I really prayed about this. This is on my heart. Because I want to be serious for all the listeners out there, because this is a great starting point, because it's not about you. These questions are not about what you can do for me, but what I can do for you. And for those of you that are out there building businesses and becoming entrepreneurs and making millions of dollars and having sales teams and culture, you ask this to your team members. Why wouldn't you ask this to your spouse? And my wife's looking at me going, honey, you got to ask me these questions tonight. So I will ask you the questions tonight. But I mean, seriously, like people listening to this.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are afraid because, you know, my advice to people, when I talk to people, I'm like, listen, if you put your husband first, I promise you, sometimes it takes a little longer, but they will put you first at some point and your marriage will take off. It will be absolutely incredible. But it's that fear of, if I ask my husband, what can I do to help you? It's going to be me serving you, me doing all this stuff. And they're not going to reciprocate. And that's a fear a lot of people have. And yeah. They told me straight out. What would you say to that?
No, I think you're right. And they're speaking out of that deep emotional need for love. Mm-hmm. And when you don't feel loved by the person, there's no emotion that's pushing you to love them. Mm-hmm. You see, it has to be a matter of the mind, you know, to say, you know, okay, here's what I've been asked to do by God, you know. And husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. He died for the church. And that's to be our attitude.
And that's you guys. That's you guys. I always say that. I'm like, read the next line.
You want me to die, huh? You're killing me off already, huh? You're not finding a better person than me, baby. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but, it's when you get that picture that this is my role, and what I want to do is be a loving person to them. I want to reach out to meet every need I can that I can meet for them. And, yes, what happens is that they do tend to respond. Now, some people say, yeah, but what if you try that and they don't respond? Well, okay, so they don't respond. They're still, you know, not responding to you. There is a place, there is a time. If you do, I ask for people to do it for 6 months, you know, do it for 6 months, not 3 weeks, you know, 6 months. And if they still just show no appreciation for you, no love for you, there is a place to say, honey, I don't know how you feel about us, but I really feel like that for the last 6 months or so here, I have really been loving you the best way I know how. And I hope you feel it. Do you feel that or do you not feel that? You can kind of let them give you a little feedback. And if they say, oh, yeah, well, yeah, you've been altogether different, you know. And you say, well, I just want to make sure that I'm really getting through because I really am trying to love you. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't really know if you love me because I don't see you, you know, reaching out to me at all. I don't know. How do you feel about, you know, your relationship with me? You know, there's a place for a real open, honest talk like that, you know. And sometimes that's what it takes for a husband who maybe just, you know, he's so busy and everything else. And he, in his mind, he loves you. And, you know, that's, he says, that's why I'm working, you know, to support the family, you know. And so in his mind, he's loving her. But now he's beginning to realize, oh, she's not feeling, you know, what I'm feeling. I'm feeling loved by her, but she's not feeling it. So that kind of conversation can be difficult, but sometimes we have to have those kind of conversations.
And I think for all the listeners, I think go back to the first podcast we did with Dr. Chapman, because I don't think in the beginning he was armed with the five love languages. If you're asking those three questions and you're coupling them with the five love languages on how your spouse responds, I think you're going to have a much higher, I don't want to call it success rate, but you're going to have a much better response. And if you do it for 6 months and use it, whether they like words of affirmation or they like touch or they like special time together, whatever that is, find out what they resonate with and asking those questions and keeping on and keeping on. Unless a person has really, really low self-esteem where they just can't love themselves, that may be another challenging situation. But if you're using the five love languages with these three questions, I think your success rate just skyrockets.
Well, you just mentioned something. I'm curious your take on it, Dr. Chapman, about the low esteem, the low self-esteem a person has. It is hard for them to let someone love them.
Yeah, I think if you grew up in a home, you know, where you didn't feel loved and you were given negative words about yourself, and so you have this sense that I'm not capable of really loving people or maybe even capable of being loved or even worthy of being loved. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is where the Christian message can really be helpful, because, you know, the scriptures say God loved us while we were sinners, mm-hmm, and sent Christ to die for us. And if he sent Christ to die for us, we're important.
Yes.
We're important to God.
Yes.
And I say, I can understand your feelings, you know, because of what you went through and with your family growing up. And you didn't choose that. You know, we didn't choose our history. We're all influenced by our history, but we didn't choose it. And we don't have to be controlled by our history. As we grow, we can learn, you know, God, if God values me, then I'm worth something, mm-hmm, you know, and he's gifted me. He's gifted every one of us in some way. He's gifted me. So what I want to do is take whatever God has given me and find ways that I can use it to serve and help other people in the family and out of the family.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you're made on purpose. And I think that's hard for some people and us to realize that you are made on purpose for a purpose. Yeah. And a lot of people, they just don't know that. And so how hard it is for them to let a spouse love them is something new. But I hope this podcast, and I know your ministry obviously in general is just has changed that. So that prayer you made years and years and years ago, wow, look where you've come. Look what you know what I mean? Look how God has used you. It's incredible.
Yeah. And God will change our heart.
Sure.
If we ask him.
Absolutely.
Because he wants our heart to be with his heart.
Yes, absolutely.
And he'll answer that prayer. And I'm just grateful, you know, that God did that in my heart so that I was open to do it and seeing the value of it. You know,
yeah,
it's not that she needs to be meeting my needs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned that the fact that I didn't know the love language. I didn't know anything about love languages in those days. And I've often said this, you know, listen, people had good marriages before I wrote the love languages, but they did what we did. They kind of stumbled upon it. You know, because when I started asking those questions, she started telling me, you know, well, you could wash the dishes, you could vacuum the floors, you could clean the toilets, you could, you know, all these things would make it easier for me. See, looking back on it, she was telling me her love language was acts of service. And I didn't know anything about the concept, but when I found out that those things would be meaningful to her, I started doing them. And then she started giving me words of affirmation. Before that, she didn't give me words of affirmation, I guess because she didn't think I was worthy of any, because I wasn't doing anything. So looking back on it, we stumbled upon what made the other person feel loved. And I think that happens often in marriages. So people can have good marriages and not even have the concept of love languages. But they have to discover, you know, what makes the other person feel loved and then be willing to do it. I had a guy say to me, he said, Dr. Chapman, my wife and I read your book, The Five Love Languages, and we took the quiz, and her language is acts of service. But he said, I'll tell you and her, if it's going to take my washing dishes and my vacuuming floors for her to feel loved, she can forget that. And I said, well, that's your choice.
I was just going to go there, too, actually. I'm glad you brought that up. So, like, I'm sorry, continue. That was great. You read my mind right there.
I said, if you want to live with a wife who has what I call an empty love tank, then that's your choice. I said, love is a choice. I said, what I'm giving you is information on how to meet her emotional need for love. But if you choose not to love her in that way, that's your choice. And then you're going to live with a wife who has an empty love tank. I said, I have lived with both, same woman, early years, empty love tank, later years, full love tank. And I said, I much prefer the present wife, even though it's the same wife, but now that she feels love, she's altogether different when her love tank is full. Mm-hmm. So that's where we come back to that concept of the title of this book, is that love is a choice. You know, I give information on how to effectively love, you know, but it's your choice. You make it to love or to be selfish.
Yeah. And that choice is something that we choose daily. And I think that's something we forget. Sometimes we're like, all right, I choose to love. I want to love. And then we go back to our normal, you know, maybe our reactions to our husband or even to our children or to our parents or siblings, the way we, you know, what our actions are toward them daily. We have to remember that all those moments in our day are our decision. We can choose to love in that moment or not. And we sometimes think that we're in love, everything's good, I don't have to work for it, or I don't have to put in the effort for it, but it's daily, and sometimes it's hourly. Sometimes we work together a lot, so it's very often, if you know what I mean.
Please. I'll pay someone to vacuum the floors. I'll pay someone to wash the dishes, and I'm just joking.
But it's something to remember, and I, you know, it's an ongoing choice.
You're exactly right. Exactly right. You know, there was a stage in our life in which I did say to my wife, honey, if I hired somebody to mow the grass, would that be just as meaningful to you? And she said, well, yeah, that's okay. So from that time on, I hired somebody to do the grass. But she knows it's an act of love, you know. And at Christmas time, I pay to have somebody come in and decorate our house for Christmas. And she says to me, that is one of the greatest gifts you ever give me, is when you hire somebody to come in and do this, you know, because it's work, you know, and she's at a stage where she can't do all that stuff.
This is the best podcast of all time.
These podcasts are costing me a lot of money. Yesterday, I had an interview with a gentleman who has a house manager named Betty, and she runs the whole house. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a great idea. But if my wife ever hears about that, I'm going to have a house manager.
Me and the five girls will do the decorations, and it takes hours and hours. I mean, it's fun, but I'm just like, oh, this is never ending. Wow.
Could you imagine? We don't make money in the podcast. I'm going
to
lose money.
I have to say, something that you said, Dr. Chapman, is you asked her, you were doing the grass, and then you asked her if that would be the same if you hired someone. Now, maybe a lot of people wouldn't even think, let me actually ask my wife, because we don't realize that sometimes it's the service from ourselves that is what they are desiring. And if we hire it out, it's kind of insulting. It's like, hold on a second.
Yeah.
So the fact that you asked was incredible.
Yeah. And she could have said, you know, well, no, I don't think so, because I like to see you do that, you know. Well, then I've got to decide, am I going to continue to invest the time to do that, you know? Okay, so fine. One of the biggest investments we make in life is loving our spouse. And whatever it takes, what is the rest of life like if we don't have a loving spouse, you know, that we're not loving them and they're loving us? I mean, there's nothing more important than that. I mean, money's not as important as that. Position is not as important as that. Life's greatest meaning is found in relationships. First of all, with God, then with our spouse, if we're married, and then our children, if the children come along. That's where the greatest satisfaction comes. It's in building into each other's lives, at helping children grow up to be healthy, responsible children who learn how to love, you know, when they're children and then move into adulthood. We're doing them a great service, and it brings great satisfaction to us as well.
All I'm hearing in the podcast, the most expensive investment, I'm just thinking to myself, wow, this is really going to cost me some money. Let me ask you one more question, Dr. Chapman. You know, before we sign off, any other really good stories in the book that you want to relay to us? Because we talked about, it seemed like Gino was out there fishing.
I want to talk about, like, because there's a lot of people that I know personally, and I know this is all over the world, where there's forgiveness issues, there's anger issues, and And it's been 20 years, and whether it's with their spouse, with their children, with their parents, whatever it is. And they just don't, they don't know even where to start that forgiveness. And because the relationship, you know, we pretend, oh no, I haven't talked to my mom in 20 years and it's fine, everything's great, you know, but obviously there's a void in their heart of 100%.
Yeah.
Talk to those people, because that to me, I've seen, maybe it's because we're adults now and we're in the world more, but I've seen it so often nowadays where families are separated and maybe it's a misunderstanding or something. And there's a lack of forgiveness, lack of letting go. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I think if they have not apologized for what they have done to you, you know, which is often the case, I use a different word rather than forgiveness. I use the word release. Because, you know, in the Bible, forgiveness is always a response to a confession of wrong. When does God forgive us? When we confess our sins, God is willing to forgive us. God doesn't forgive everybody. He forgives people who acknowledge they need to be forgiven. And so if the spouse if the parent with whom you have a fractured relationship doesn't apologize for their part in that, then I think you release them to God. You know, this is after you've talked to them, you've tried to help them understand and they don't. And then rather than letting it be bitterness in your heart, you know, and hurt and carrying all of that around, just say, God, I've done everything I know to do. They're not understanding me and what I'm saying. So I just want to release them to you. Put them in your hands. And I want to release my anger, my hurt and all. I want to release all that to you so that I can now go on and live my life in a worthy way. And even love them. If there's some things I can do to help them, I want to do those things. You know, the scriptures say, don't take revenge. Don't try to make them pay for it. You know, leave that up to God. God's a just God, and God's a loving God. And if they ever confess to God, God will forgive them. And if they don't, they're going to be responsible at the judgment for what the choices they made, you know. So I don't think God wants us to carry the burden of past wrongs that were done to us. I think he wants us to release those people and release those feelings to him. And then ask him to help us now to be a loving person.
Wow.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Before we sign off, Dr. Chapman, where can people get the book?
I assume they can get it at Amazon. I haven't gone on there to check, but I'm assuming they can.
They can
also go to 5lovelanguages.com. That's the website. Really, you can see all of my books there, and you can order my books, most of my books there. And this one you certainly can order there as well, 5lovelanguages.com.
And
it's a fascinating study of real life, people in all kind of situations who loved and reached out and had the joy of seeing the impact of their love on other people.
And I do, the reason why I love this book, like just like you said, is that it's other people's story. And we can relate. So, I mean, we, you know, as parents, we teach our children all these things and we try to teach them right and wrong. But sometimes you have to live it, or sometimes you have to see other people live it. And so reading the book, it's like, wow, I can relate to pretty much every single story that's in there.
Yeah.
And it does help with our relationship. So I just highly recommend it because it has done a lot for me personally.
Yeah.
And I would say also go to the website because you have a lot of content, a lot of information on there. I think you have quizzes and you have so many different documents that you can download and tests that you can take and start the journey with the 5 love languages. And those 3 questions, go back and listen to the show again on the 3 questions that you need to be asking your spouse. And I think the big thing for me is love is a choice. Love is an action word. And, it begins with you and not what you say or what you feel. Those are really, really big takeaways for me. So we just want to thank you for being on again.
Any last words for us, for our listeners?
Well, first of all, thank you. I always enjoy chatting with you all and appreciate what you're doing. You never know how many people you're impacting. It goes out there. But if one person is touched by one program that you do, it's worth doing it.
100%.
So, you know, if all of us can just recognize we don't all have the same gifts and abilities or the same calling in life, but God just wants us to be faithful with what we have. I had a good friend who had multiple sclerosis, and he got to the place where he could hardly move anything. He laid in the bed all day long, but he was a tremendous prayer warrior, and I let him know everything I was doing so he could pray for me. But he, you know, prayer is a powerful ministry. And sometimes in his situation, that's about all you can do. But man, having him praying for me, you know, through the years until he went on to heaven, was a tremendous impact on my life. So whoever we are, wherever we are, if we've got life, there's a ministry, there's a place for us to be serving.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Dr. Chapman.
Thank you. Beautiful, beautiful. I'm so thankful that you're here and, you know, incredible work that you've been doing. So I'm just very grateful.
Yeah, thank you. And God bless you.
Thank
and
you.
All those who are watching.
Thank you, Dr. Chapman.